Market View on Money FM 89.3.
Thanks for joining us on Primetime on Money FM 89.3. Bharati Jagdish with you on Market View. Fears that Federal Reserve rate hikes to fight rapid inflation would tip the economy into a recession continue to dog markets. The Dow Jones Industrial Average posted its biggest loss since 2020 just on Wednesday after another major retailer warned of rising cost pressures. In Asia, Chinese banks cut a key interest rate for long-term loans by a record amount today, a move that would reduce mortgage costs and may help counter weak loan demand caused by a property slump and COVID lockdowns as well. The five-year loan prime rate, a reference for home mortgages, was lowered to 4.45% from 4.6%. How much will all of this help? To discuss this, take stock of the week and make sense of continuing market volatility, Jeff Howie, SGX market strategist, joins us. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Bharati. How are you?
Doing good, Jeff. I hope you are doing well as well.
Yep.
Well, what a week it has been. Let's talk first about the week's market sell-off. What do you make of it?
Yeah, look, I thought it was a mixed week. So our STI actually ended the week up 1.6%, but as you say, it was mostly a sell-off. The FTSE Developed Index has declined something like 2.5% in Singapore dollar terms for the Asia trading week. And that's predominantly, as you mentioned, you've got your S&P 500 declining 4% for the first four sessions of the week, whilst over here we did see our China CSI 300 actually gain close to 3% for the week. So interesting that China has actually been outperforming US stock pretty much since the end of April. So since the 26th of April, you've got the CSI 300 basically outpacing the S&P 500 by as much as 10%. Now, as you mentioned just before, growth and inflation have been the main drivers, which of course are having these varied measured impacts across the various countries.
Let's talk about China since you brought them up. News today that China lowered its five-year loan prime rate to 4.45% from 4.6%. To what extent will this move really help?
Yeah, that lowering of the it's the five-year loan prime rate by 15 basis points. It follows a 5 basis point cut in January, and prior to that, it hadn't actually been lowered since April 2020, which I think was 10 basis points back then. And this particular policy rate, or target interest rate, if you want to call it that, it's recognised to be more directed to the real estate sector through providing lower mortgage rates, with the other policy rates like the medium-term lending facility, which was maintained at the same rate earlier in the week. That impacts broader liquidity. Reserve requirement ratios, of course, impact the broader borrowing costs. So real estate is really where it's at with that announcement today. So data released also by NBS, that's China National Bureau of Statistics, back on Wednesday, it did show that China's housing market had continued to ease in April. More cities reporting a decline in housing prices or registering slower growth. China Daily, the state newspaper, also reported today that China is rolling out policies to bolster rational home buying demand in an effort to help the housing market sustain itself against the headwinds. So this is important, and our UOB, they estimate that real estate accounts for 20 to 25% of China's economy, and thus UOB maintains that economic recovery is, of course, pretty hard to establish without addressing that weakness in the property sector.
The thing is, you did mention that sentiment on China has been surprisingly better. How would you explain all of that, considering that they still have that zero COVID policy in place?
Yeah, look, that's exactly right. That's so that zero COVID policy is actually what's creating a lot of the issues in the growth downward growth revisions, and that's been the way all year. You know, basically, China currently maintains a 5.5% annual GDP growth target. The stimulus that's just been announced, it's looking to facilitate that. But the year did begin with IMF downgrading its growth estimate for 2022 in China, firstly from 5.6% to 4.8% in Jan, and then down to 4.4% in April. And from the outset, the IMF, the World Bank, they've all anchored their China growth concerns to the pandemic-induced economic disruptions and, of course, the financial stress encountered by property developers. So what we saw with the recent earnings season in China, the financial sector earnings offered quite a bit of granularity on the economic impact of the pandemic. So China Merchant Banks, the big bank, shared that the recurring impact of the pandemic has been created this weakened willingness of the residents to consume, and importantly, reduced effective demand for loans by the small micro businesses. Now, we know those are two very key segments, propensity to consume, SMB activity, two very important parts for China's growth engines. So very much, so much clearly still pivots on China being able to effectively contain COVID.
Let's talk about the US for a moment. Of course, we're seeing evidence of red-hot inflation seeping into the economy. This is sending chills through investors, especially after major US retailers reported that people are cutting back on buying bigger ticket items. What should we be expecting in the weeks ahead as a result of all of this?
Well, growth and inflation are the two mega macro drivers that really matter most to markets, and they remain very much firmly in the focus for the weeks ahead. So the Ukraine crisis, it's simultaneously weighed growth and lifted inflation. And as we know, sustained higher inflation can also stymie growth. So you can expect, I guess, in the weeks ahead, a little bit more debate and conjecture and commentary, or maybe some discussion in the FOMC minutes that I think are released on Wednesday night. Maybe discussion on how the Fed juggles inflation and growth, perhaps calling on broader government support to address the supply shock that have impacted the key inflation drivers so that the Fed does not have to move beyond the normalization threshold for rates to the point that, you know, those interest rates might constrain growth. So that's just an example of the kind of debate we might see in the weeks ahead led by the Fed Reserve. But as we say, it really matters what's happening in the Ukraine. It's the overarching driver. Tuesday will actually mark 3 months since Russia commenced military action in the Ukraine, and much of the world continues to look for developments that can at least point towards some type of prolonged ceasefire. So we've got inflation. April CPI was up 8.3% year-on-year in the US. It was up 9% in the UK. Singapore will actually report its April CPI on Monday at 1 p.m., and that's expected to increase 5.6% year-on-year.
At this stage, Jeff, what could possibly help temper volatility in the market? I mean, how many things can you really price in, right?
Yeah, exactly. But you see, everything fits in a framework. It's either on a growth front or it's an inflation front that's actually impacting. Like, and you break it down and you look at inflation and what's driving inflation. It's the higher energy prices and it's still the supply chain bottlenecks. So you can break everything down to the point that there are the high frequency data points that can actually provide some type of roadmap, and that's the thing. There's just so much data coming out, so much nowadays, and policymakers weighing into it as well. That's why we're seeing these swings. So investors, I think they should be aware that while we say that the SDI has been the strongest developed market in the world so far, generating very close to 6% year-to-date total return, investors should be cognizant that the SDI has actually been up as much as 10% so far this year. It's gone back to zero. It's gone back up to 10% this year, and then back to where it is now, and down, taking that 10% year-to-date gain to a 3% year-to-date gain just recently. So there's a lot going on, and as we said, there's a lot of different drivers. So if you look at the performances of the best and the least performing SDI stocks since the SDI was last around those 34.50 highs in early April, you've got a very big different trading range. You've got Yangtze Jiang gaining 15% since the 6th of April, while Keppel DC REITs declined 15%. So very much, very different forces, as we said, that you can break down. So that's one thing investors can do in our stock market, because it is highly diversified with many countries covered in terms of the revenue reach of these companies, as well as many different industries and sectors.
We should talk about NIO, Jeff. Chinese electric vehicle maker NIO debuted on the SGX today. We saw the stock pop at the open, rising by nearly 20%. Then it paired its gains to trade higher by around 1.3%. At this point, we're seeing, what, $16.66? What are your thoughts on the company's prospects?
Just exciting. Anytime a new company comes to list on SGX, it's always a very exciting day for us. So it's a secondary listing of its Class A ordinary shares. It had no funds raised And it is now among our largest listed companies on SGX with a market cap around 30 billion Sing dollars. Today it was a top 50 stock by turnover, and the company itself is a pioneer leading company in the premium smart electronic vehicle market. It's been an innovator in the new tech, devices such as batteries, electric powertrains, autonomous driving, and some of their flagship models, according to Frost & Sullivan, were amongst the top four selling premium battery SOVs in China, as measured by sales volumes. And one more little interesting factoid on the company I can offer is they actually have proprietary battery swap technology, which allows buyers to basically buy just the vehicle and lease the batteries. So there's quite a lot of in that company for investors to read, and you'll see a lot of reports and coverage and profiling in the next couple of weeks.
And speaking of the coverage, they have said that they are facing supply chain problems as well. So clearly there are challenges here. It's not all rosy.
Absolutely. Cobalt, copper, nickel, lithium, all these special ingredients and minerals that go into batteries, really important, and they're certainly not spared. But on the other side, when you look at the technology sector, which globally has been the worst performing sector across the world, one bright spot in there is actually the demand for high performance computing, as well as automakers. So still quite a lot of demand for automakers in the technology side of it, as opposed to a lot of the downward growth revisions we're seeing weighing the potential for consumers to basically buy devices such as PC, smartphones and tablets and whatnot.
Jeff, looking ahead, we are going to be seeing Australians going to the polls tomorrow to vote for a new Prime Minister. Whoever wins, of course, will have to grapple with hot button issues like the rising costs of living, the increased borrowing costs after the country raised rates for the first time in more than a decade. What sorts of challenges would you say have to be front and centre for the new government? How do you expect markets to react?
Yeah, you know, you've actually named the challenges that really have come out. High housing prices, high costs of living, wages not keeping up with inflation, that $1 trillion of federal debt. They are the key economic challenges that really have come to the forefront in the various people forums. And there's also these increased calls for renewable energy investments, more infrastructure, the growth of the manufacturing sector, and also more mineral processing industries to be built. So there's a lot of challenges. And at the same time, you have also these significant external economic headwinds, which, of course, have been exacerbating the cost of living and inflation. So I guess one other key concern that, you know, is based on the polling is that Australia may or may not have a majority government. And if a new government is elected, you really need strong, effective policy momentum to start from day one, too. And that will have to be established as soon as possible. I mean, if you look at Australia's history of elections, we've had six different winners over six different elections since 2004. If a new government, the opposition party is elected, that will be 7 in 7. So having a government, obviously, that has a majority, it would obviously be an important first aspect for the markets that they will be watching on Saturday. But if it's not a majority, it may take a couple of days to form, as we saw some 10 years ago.
And certainly there will be some uncertainty that could create more volatility in the markets as well. What other developments are you looking out for next week, Jeff?
Yeah, well, in terms of the stock market, I think a pretty important one is Singtel reporting its full year results before the Friday open. So that stock itself has drawn 675 million Sing dollars of net institutional buying so far this year, with Citi Developments a distant second at $200 million of net inflow. So Singtel has led that tally of inflow. And for the 60 to 70 telco stocks listed across the region, Asia-Pacific, that have decent market size, more than US $1 billion, Singtel is actually ranked as among the top five performers for this year so far. And the last business update was back in Feb. Singtel had noted that its 9-month revenue, it was down, I think, around 1%, but its net profit for the three quarters was up 59% year on year. And there's multiple aspects to that. However, one that a number of us closely follow is Singtel's ongoing strategic reset to develop these new growth engines in ICT and digital services. So that will be a really important point on the stock market. But economically, on Wednesday, we have our final first quarter GDP print for Singapore. I think it's going to be released on Wednesday at 8 a.m. And then industrial production will also be released on Tuesday. I think expectations of a 3.7% gain in April, following that 3.4% gain in March. But interesting for the GDP, we are expecting consensus to consensus is suggesting we'll have an upward revision to 3.7%.
What is that based on exactly?
Yeah, so we had a 3.4% print, advance print for our first quarter GDP back on the 14th of April, and that takes its information for January and February. And then the final GDP print takes into consideration the March data, and that is and thus our final GDP print is expected to be revised upwards to 3.7% from 3.4%, and importantly too, the quarter on quarter growth is expected to come in at 0.8% versus the advanced reading, which was at 0.4%.
All right, thank you very much for that, Jeff. Jeff Howie, SGX Market Strategist. Thanks for joining us on Market View. You stay safe and take care, Jeff.
Pleasure, thank you.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.